This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, April 9th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, Legal Issues in the News explores when the dance floor can become grounds for a lawsuit. We'll also get a forecast from meteorologist Ed Kieser. First, a look at our news today. The Chicago Sun-Times reports that Illinois parents owe $3 billion in back child support. The Sun-Times says at least 20 Illinois fathers owe their families more than $100,000 in back payments apiece, and some deadbeat dads owe three times as much. Nationwide, parents owe about $100 billion in back child support. But prosecutors and state officials have powerful tools to try to get parents to pay up. They can seize paychecks, bank accounts, and tax refunds, and stop driver's license renewals. It's not just dads that are delinquent. State records show one mother owes nearly $72,000 in back child support to her ex-husband. Illinois' Secretary of State says he's staying out of the debate over whether or not the state should issue driving certificates to illegal immigrants. Amanda Vinicky has more.
Advocates have for years called on lawmakers to give illegal immigrants the legal right to drive. This year, the proposal has picked up some momentum. The Illinois House approved allowing undocumented immigrants living in the state to get a driver's certificate. Like a driver's license, applicants would have to pass an exam. Unlike a license, the certificate could not double as a legal ID. While opponents argue it rewards people who break immigration laws, supporters say many in the country drive illegally already, and this will require them to carry insurance, making the road safer. Secretary of State Jesse White says he has no opinion.
I don't have a thought as to whether we should or not.
White says should the proposal become law, his office will comply and make the certificates available. All it means to him, he says, is that he'll need appropriate staff on hand to issue them. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Champaign City officials hope three homes being built for low-income residents can start a trend of improving neighborhood conditions and property values. Last week, the City Council entered into a contract with Homestead Corporation to build the homes in city-owned vacant lots in the Douglas Park area. The Council's goal of infill housing calls for a balance of growth on Champaign's fringe with new development in the city's urban core. Greg Skaggs is a rehabilitation technician with Champaign's Neighborhood Services Department. He says the infill housing pilot program was among the goals adopted by council members last year.
Look at some of these neighborhoods, look at some properties that are like this that, you know, could they be infilled, put a house on there, provide housing for a family, get it back on the tax records rather than just being an empty lot that may be unsightly or that the city has to maintain. Throughout, but try to get these lots, put to good use.
Homestead Corporation was the only company to submit a proposal for building and marketing the houses. Skaggs says other developers weren't set up for marketing, and the city council will likely restructure the requirements for similar construction projects down the road. Homestead is buying each lot from the city for $1 apiece. The city will also subsidize a portion of the cost of each home. Developers say the first turbines erected for the 240-turbine Twin Groves Wind Farm in eastern McLean County have begun producing power. Bill Whitlock, a spokesman for Horizon Wind Energy, says the first of the turbines began producing energy early last month, and 37 of them are now up and running. When Phase 1 of the project is completed at the end of this month, 120 turbines will be operational. Phase 2, which has a scheduled completion date of January of next year, will add another 120 turbines to complete that project. Indiana University officials have approved plans for a $64 million technology center. It would include a partially underground section to protect supercomputers from tornadoes and other extreme weather. School trustees have approved the design plans for the 172,000-square-foot cyber infrastructure facility, putting construction on a fast track for the next 2 years. The data center will be a partially underground one-story building to house computers and data storage. Illinois vineyards took a hit with the recent cold snap, and as Krista Kakowski reports, customers buying wine made in the state could see the effects.
After owners of vineyards across Illinois saw their crops begin to take off in March with warm temperatures, they're now looking at those same crops to assess damage from the cold. Some grape growers are reporting up to 80% of their crops were harmed. After a vine sprouts a bud that becomes damaged, owners say it will still produce a second bud. However, it won't produce as many grapes. Mike Bogler, a grape grower from Ava, says this forces wineries to buy grapes elsewhere.
I expect they're going to have to go out of the state, maybe to California or some other location to access grapes, because there should be a shortage of grapes in Illinois.
Bogler says the damage won't be permanent on vines, but it will hurt this year's yield. A spokesperson for Alto Vineyards in Alto Pass says they will be forced to buy from others in order to make wine, and that could cause the cost of a bottle to increase by a few dollars. I'm Krista Kakowski.
For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. When one takes to the dance floor, one doesn't always think about the possibility of lawsuits stemming from such a decision. And yet they happen, and there's one particular dance that's been at the heart of a lot of lawsuits. Here's commentator Amy Guida with this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
Back in the early to mid-1900s, there was a somewhat nasty bug that made its way across the country. It apparently caused all sorts of injuries to people, especially women. Its common name? The jitterbug, better known as the dance craze that one dictionary described as a strenuously acrobatic dance consisting of a few standardized steps augmented by twirls, splits, and somersaults, and performed chiefly to boogie-woogie and swing. It's that notorious bug that helped establish the legal idea of negligent dancing. When news spread a few days ago that a woman in Chicago had filed a lawsuit complaining of negligent dancing, you'd think that the concept was brand new. But the idea that a dance partner or the owner of the dance floor can be negligent has been around a long time, way before a large portion of buttered asparagus found its way to the middle of a dance floor in Pennsylvania in 1967 and ended up on the bottoms of some fallen dancers. Most older negligence cases that involved dancing, like that one, focused on the condition of the floor. But a few addressed the condition of the dancers as they twirled, split, and somersaulted their way into legal history. There's even one case where a dancer faced criminal charges for what the state argued was particularly strenuous and violent movement to music. The court rejected the idea that any dancer should be held liable for criminal assault. Now, we don't know the precise facts of the Chicago cases yet, and we'll probably have to wait a while to find out what both sides have to say about what happened. But I can say this after reading jitterbug cases. It used to be that the one who was twirled sometimes fell, and the twirled fallen sometimes sued. And court opinions sometimes contained powerful anti-dancing language, like condemning the frantic act of fast and furious, rough and boisterous, wild jitterbug antics. Courts found themselves mighty protective of the gentler gender, despite assumption of the risk arguments that suggested that those who agreed to dance also agreed to the risk of injuries caused by dancing. Sure, courts didn't always rule in favor of the plaintiff. One court in the 50s ruled in the defendant's favor, but warned others to take heed that by doing so they weren't absolving jitterbugging of legal consequences or anything like that, lest people get the wrong idea. So whatever the facts in Chicago, lawyers on both sides will likely take a trip into the light, fantastic days of the jitterbug. We'll have to see if the judge sides with those past jurists who warned skeptically that dancers must not look only into the captivating eyes of their lovely partners, but ought to keep an eye out for injury as well. Or with those who agreed with the plaintiffs that dances like the sweet-sounding jitterbug can, in fact, be anything but. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. We're not quite through with the freezing weather over parts of the two-state area. The National Weather Service still has a freeze watch for most of northern and central Indiana through today and tomorrow morning, and for southern Illinois and southern Indiana for tonight into tomorrow morning. Our highs today will be a little bit warmer. In the north, cloudy with a few scattered flurries lingering. In central sections, a mix of clouds and sun, and in the south, mostly sunny. Highs today ranging from 38 in northeast Indiana to 58 in far southern Illinois. For tonight, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy in the north. In central and southern sections, clear to partly cloudy, and lows will range from 24 in northeast Indiana to 32 in west central and southwest Illinois. For tomorrow, in Illinois, it'll cloud up again with rain spreading into western and central sections in the afternoon, and still partly and mostly sunny in Indiana. And highs tomorrow ranging from 42 in northwest Illinois to 58 in the south. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, April 9th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.